Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It's spring 1957 in Budapest after the failed Hungarian uprising. Though young Andor Hirsch looks like an angelic Oliver Twist, he's actually a tough kid, given to smoking, jumping onto streetcars, and squeezing in and out of small places. He knows every loose fence, every crumbling building in his part of Budapest. He likes collecting ticket stubs and returnable old bottles. He lives with his mother, Clara, who survived the Holocaust in hiding, while his father was sent to the camps. But he still talks to him each day, patiently waiting for his return. Until one day, an enormous thuggish man, a heavy-drinking pork butcher, who speaks like an oaf and rides a motorcycle, enters his life. He knows his mom, and he seems to like Andor, too, for some reason, but he refuses to accept that this creature could possibly be his biological father. He'd rather be called an orphan. Orphan is the name of a new film that premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival. It's a lavishly detailed and deeply moving coming-of-age drama about the family history of a boy trying to survive in a ruined, Soviet-occupied Budapest. It's co-written and directed by Oscar-winning filmmaker Laszlo Nemes. I last spoke with him on this show in 2016 about his previous film, Sunset, and I'm very pleased to have Laszlo Nemes in person on site at TIFF to tell us more about Orphan. Hi, Laszlo.
Hi.
Thanks so much for meeting with me again.
Well, thanks so much for having me on this show.
So your first feature, Son of Saul, took place during World War II, while your second one was around leading up to the First World War,
Correct.
The First World War. This one is in the aftermath of the Hungarian uprising. So why are all your movies shot in traumatic times?
I'm interested in trauma and the effects of trauma on the individual. I think the human existence is a very fragile one in a way, you know, and the 20th century was a tremendously difficult period to survive for the individual in the Western world, and I think also very specifically in Europe, the traumas tended to stack up, you know. And we still carry these days the effects of these past periods of totalitarianisms and repression and brutality and war, and they're still with us.
And at the same time, more specifically, you said it in the spring when both May Day, the workers' holiday, and Jewish Passover were both coming around the same time. Can you talk about the specificity of your timing?
Well, I wanted to tell the story of a, you know, roughly 12-year-old kid in Budapest, also because it happened to be my father's story, and it coincided with the post-1956 revolution of Hungary. It's spring. It's the time is good for some form of celebration, revival, rebirth, some form of coming to terms with what we are, and find our new selves. And I guess that's why the spring is interesting. And in this movie, the spring brings something very ominous from the past.
Andor spends the first few years of his life in an orphanage until he's reclaimed by his mother. I call it sort of a Oliver Twist story, but is it fair to call it Dickensian or compared
maybe
to that?
It's a Hamlet story, because there's the young prince who talks to his ghost father and dreams of killing his uncle, who is the usurper on the throne.
Oh, so Anshari is Ophelia?
Maybe. It's there is a sort of Oedipal element, you know, that's very archetypal in the story, and it's when I discovered that my father's story had this very archetypal core, it made me even more, it gave me even more energy to want to make it.
Well, let's talk about that. Names are so important to the characters in Orphan. Orphan. Why is Anders so proud of his name, Hirsch?
Well, it's his, it's the imagined father's name. You know, he carries his name. It's it, by the way, it was my real, the real name in the real story. It was also for me a way to pay homage to this man who was a very sophisticated man and who my grandmother adored, and who was killed in the Second World War because he was Jewish. I think it's I just inherited this and tried to use it as a story element, because giving up your name is something very, very, very difficult. And I knew that my father had to change his name at the age of 12 and take on the name of this brutal man that was coming from the countryside. It has such a tremendous force impact on me growing up that I felt that I had to make something with this.
Does that apply to your name, Nemes?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love the look of the film. The camera sees things through dirty windows, lace curtains, or from inside boxes or behind rubble. And it seems to follow Andor around wherever he goes, but sometimes at a distance, sometimes more close up. Can you talk about Andor's point of view and how it's done it visually?
I've always been interested in immersive filmmaking, not you know, telling the story from outside or from a sort of omniscient point of view, but really getting the camera close to the main character and live with the main character the experience of the story. So in this case, I really wanted the audience to be the witness of this, of what's going on, what's happening to the main character, not so much a judge but a witness. And I'm much more interested in that kind of position, and so that the audience at some point has to give up this very important control that they think they have over every story, you know. And I wanted to give a more subjective position to the audience.
You, of course, know the saying in Chekhov, if a gun is introduced in the first act, it'll appear later. He, Andor digs up in the dirt, he finds a gun wrapped in a, no spoilers, of course, but
no
wrapped in a cloth.
Yeah.
How did you feel about constructing it that way?
I felt well. I knew that weapons were all over the place in the post-56 world of Hungary. The 56th revolution is also could be understood as a sort of civil war and almost like the continuation of the Second World War. All these tensions, internal tensions of Hungarian society suddenly released. They happened to reflect the global level, the Cold War and the opposition of two blocs. So almost in the Hungarian story, there was much more going on, and also in this there's a little, there are little elements that progressively become much more important.
I'm interested in, I mean, this is all before you were born, but your depiction of the arts, like theater, Commedia dell'arte, propaganda, a record plays Blue Danube jazz version, like cheesy jazz version.
Yes.
Talk about the importance of background music and images and things like that within the period that you're portraying?
I'm always interested in bringing to the viewer a story that's in its many textures and layers creates something that's true, you know, that I feel is true or reflects the core of a given period. And I'm always looking for ways to try to put more more music of the period, more sounds, you know, people were listening to radio and bringing in this element as much as possible to the movie. So to give a very childlike position to the viewer, discovering a world and they cannot fully control it and they have to be submerged a little bit by everything that's going on.
Under grows up knowing his father was a ticket seller, yeah. I guess mainly for
yes.
theater.
Yes.
When this supposed other father appears, he buys tickets to a boxing match.
Yeah.
It's very
yeah.
sort of thuggish type
yes.
thing. Can you talk about the role of tickets within the movie? They also appear on trains. And
yes. Well, it's interesting. I guess a kid is always interested in collecting these little things. And here, only through the tickets, you have two visions of the world that collide. One that's rather sophisticated and the other that's more drawn to violence or some aggressive form of being. And it's just very instinctive, but drawing on the original story, and I knew this man was had a ticket office, I wanted to integrate it into the story to also to give a view of a world that was very eclectic and in terms of entertainment and desires and all the projections that people had, you know, they didn't have internet, you know, and not most of the time TV was not existent at that time. Cinema still, you know, but a very different hat. And imagination, I think, was very vivid because they had to project more onto the, you know, the more of their themselves, and had to invent more, because not everything was about the imagery, you know, but they had to extrapolate, they had to invent, they had to imagine, and I think in that sense it was a world that was more. This was more full of desire because not all the needs were satisfied immediately.
I'm curious, I don't know Hungarian history well enough,
yeah.
but it was a socialist government
yes.
before the 1956,
yes.
right?
Yes.
But it became a very Stalinist or
yes.
hardcore
yes.
Soviet.
Yes.
So in the film, you show things like very severe, for example, the mother and his best friend's mother work in a grocery store
yes.
that used to belong
yes.
to the friend's family.
Yeah.
Would this have happened just then, or was it going on for a long time? I'm trying to place it within history.
You know, there was a nationalization in the 1940s, 49. Between 45 and 49, it wasn't sure whether the communists or the Soviet agents would have the upper hand. But they eventually did, and everything was nationalized, basically, and they took away a lot of stores and a lot of personal private property, and it became a Stalinistic regime until basically the revolution of 56, after which it was there was a sort of softer form of communism that came to power, but because probably Moscow understood that they had to intervene militarily, and the Hungarians would not accept a fully Stalinistic version, although at that time it was not Stalin anymore, but still in the Eastern Bloc a lot of regimes were very harsh. So it's a complicated story in a way, but also not that complicated. You know, the totalitarianism that existed in the 20th century, be it Nazism, fascism, communism, we're always interested in destroying the individual, you know, and always trying to destroy freedom through the individual. And it's that I'm always interested in bringing the viewer to those big questions. You know, what is the role of the individual in a given society, in a given social structure? It changes. You know, it changes from over time. But what doesn't change is the propension of in human beings for destruction and for oppression. You know, whenever it's possible, we go back and we want to oppress. You know.
Finally, I cannot not mention, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, but Boitorian Barabas.
Very well
pronounced. The actor who played the lead role of Andor is. Where did you find him? How did he manage to... He was the center of the entire movie in a, you know, a incredible performance.
Well, it's I knew that I had to find someone who's a real person. And the kid that I found already had a very difficult personal history, difficult family history. And we had a very... big open call leading up to the film, and we saw a lot of kids, maybe thousands and thousands, and there was a long audition process. But I understood, I felt that he was bringing an energy of rage and sensitivity. And some form of internal beauty, and also he was very photogenic, which was also important when you make a film, that you have to watch him for an hour or 2 hours. That we needed someone who was interesting and appealing and had in his heart the elements that the main character had to have. So we were lucky to find him.
Like I said, amazing performance in a powerful film. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Laszlo Nemes had its Orphan had its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival and will be released Orphan had its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival and will be released theatrically soon. This is Daniel Garber, The Movies, each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.